Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:07 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is December 20th, and well, the Bank of Japan surprised everyone today and followed through on the rumors that we had yesterday that they were going to change their quantitative easing program. So, with the news that the cap on the 10-year is going to move higher from 25 basis points to 50 basis points, the yen jumped by 5 full points. So that's a really significant breakup or a significant breakdown for the dollar. And it looks increasingly likely that this big uptrend that has been in place since the beginning of 2021 is truly over. This is a very emphatic move. So, what it very clearly suggests is that Japan is moving away from its quantitative easing program. They're worried about the integrity of the bond market. So that's a significant issue. Excuse me. Sorry, just had to sneeze. So this is a big move for the JGBs, and that's a big breakout on the yield. But not quite yet at the 50 basis point level. The more back history we look at, the more of a base formation completion it looks like. And again, just to reiterate that, if we go all the way back to the late 1980s when yields were at 8%, then this long sojourn around zero has looks increasingly likely that it is complete. So this is rather meaningful. And it suggests that the belly in the curve is going to be ironed out. So the 10-year will rise back up so that you're going to get more of a clear trend higher in the yield curve. And if we just simply look at the change from one day to the next, the 10-year portion of the curve has moved higher faster than just about anything else. But from a bigger picture perspective, what it also suggests for the stock market is that the days of easy liquidity and endless money being printed are over for the at least the near term. So the Nikkei was down nearly 700 points in here today. That's quite a significant downward dynamic. And then let's also pay attention to the second section index, which is so often a lead indicator, and it's encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, I did highlight the Topix Banks Index yesterday, and that was in positive territory today. So perhaps the banks were leading this move that we saw today, because obviously banks have been in a zero interest rate environment for an exceptionally long period of time, and how are they supposed to make money when they don't get to charge any interest? So, even the whisper that interest rate policy might be moving up off of zero is positive for the banking sector. But then let's think about the wider global environment. So, an easy way to think about it is that Japan is really the only place left with negative interest rates and negative yielding bonds. And well, I guess they don't have negative interest rates, but they certainly have negative bond yields. And the global total is currently around 1.3 trillion. But at the beginning of 2021, it was more like 17 trillion. And we were at a stage at that point where large numbers of sovereign bonds and corporate bonds were trading with a negative yield, which was a really rather extraordinary circumstance, and it's very much over right now. And of course, it then begs the question whether that's also going to prove an ending for the Japanese condition of having long or having had negative yielding debt for most of the last 8 years. But another So this gives us a graphic representation of just how much that has changed in the space of 2022. But perhaps more important than that is that we have central banks raising interest rates all over the world, and Japan was one of the clear exceptions. And one thing that I've been wondering about is why we haven't had more talk about the yen carry trade. So if we go back and look at the yen, it's been trending down against the dollar, or the dollar's been trending up against it for 2 years. And with zero interest rates and a quantitative easing program in action by the Bank of Japan, one could have gone there, borrowed yen, invested it in any other instrument, and picked up the carry. And then, because the yen was going downwards, then the amount of money you had to pay back would have been less anyway. So even if you just held it in just really short-term debt in another currency, one would have made money. That was a very popular trade in the last 20 years, and there were plenty of occasions when the yen was being used as the leverage avenue of choice by traders. And there was no evidence of that this year, despite the really profound downtrend in the yen. But what we certainly saw was, as soon as the yen started rallying, then there was a bit of a risk-off reaction. Now, Wall Street today finished out the day in mildly positive territory, and it has been down for 5 consecutive days. So we got a little bit of pause in here today. And the VIX index has not been surging on the upside, and it was down in a fairly dynamic manner in here today. And I find this to be really quite odd that we have very clear evidence of the downside weekly Q reversal from the region of the 200-day moving average, and so far modest follow-through on the downside, and yet volatility is falling rather than rising. And what that suggests to me is that we haven't really seen the low yet, and that there's still plenty of room for additional downside, because it's usually peaks in the VIX are coincident with major lows in the market, and we just haven't had that yet. So this is certainly something to pay attention to. We have a very, very short-term oversold condition, but that's all, and nothing in the way of a clear upper dynamic just yet. With the move that we had in the JGBs, that translated into also further upward pressure on yields in the US. So the 10-year was up another 10 basis points, firming from the 3.5% level in the region of the peak from back in June. And when we look at this on a weekly basis, it continues to look like a reasonably consistent uptrend, and realistically, a sustained move down through that 3.5% level will be required to question the consistency. So far, the reaction that we had from the 4.25 level is reasonably similar sized to the pullback that we saw in June. And then if we just flip it around and look at prices like the TLT ETF, then it got almost all the way up to test the region of the 200-day moving average, and then came back down in a dynamic manner over the last couple of days. And let's just remember that it was rising yields were the primary reason why a lot of leveraged instruments and long duration technology type companies were pulling back all the way through this year. So there's the clear potential that all we're seeing here is a very mild pause in an otherwise bearish environment for heavily levered instruments. But with this quite acute change in the dollar, gold was up $30 in here today. So pushing up through the $1,800 area, finishing at a new closing high. And again, when we look at this on a weekly basis, well, we can then clearly see that it is trading above the 200-day moving average and beginning to establish itself above that $1,800 area, which is necessary in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And gold shares were also in positive territory today, so also popping on the upside. Silver hasn't really looked back and is still pushing on the upside. It was up almost a full dollar in here today, and this, or excuse me, in excess of a dollar in here today, and approaching the psychological $25 area. So it's a little bit over, it's a little bit more overbought. But what I think is especially interesting right now is that silver, and it's quite normal to anticipate that silver should be outperforming gold in the second psychological perception stage of a bull market, and that is exactly what is happening. So silver is clearly now breaking its relative downtrend relative to gold, which has been in place for 18 months, and now improving upon that condition. So it's quite normal to anticipate that silver should outperform gold, and it will peak at an exceptionally higher rate level relative to gold by the time this big bull market ends. And this does continue to look like a new secular bull market for precious metals. Then platinum was also in positive territory, and it's pushing up and through this $1,000 level. $1,000 is a big psychological level for platinum, and the fact that we are seeing a relatively steady consolidation in this area, it does suggest that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Then what's interesting here also is palladium. It's just beginning to give some evidence of support right at the lower side of this range that's been forming for nearly 3 years. And at the largest nickel producer, Norilsk Nickel, which is the ADR no longer trades because of sanctions on Russia, but they're talking about reducing supply of nickel. So nickel prices are firming now from the $25 level, and palladium is a significant byproduct of nickel mining. So with less nickel production, that also suggests less palladium production. So then that will, of course, throw some focus onto non-US production. So Sibanye-Stillwater is now firming from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. But this is also important for the battery sector because nickel is a significant battery metal, and so is copper. So if there's going to be less nickel supply and copper prices are reasonably steady, then the chances of battery prices coming down in a meaningful way are, I think, really quite low. And this, I think, is pointing towards a difficult environment overall, that we're going to have a recession at some point over the next year, and then demand will get hit. So we should expect that there will be volatility in the industrial metals space. But there are very significant additional trends in play that the world has basically decided that carbon's a bad thing. So there's going to be more investment in energy infrastructure, and there's going to be a lot more investment in battery technology. And at the moment, China is ahead of the curve in terms of that battery technology, and CATL, or Contemporary Amperex Technology, they've got their sodium battery in the market, or at least they anticipate ramping up production of it later in 2023. But the price is not pushing through on the upside in here today. And this rising number of cases of the coronavirus in China is going to be a headwind to growth in China for at least the next quarter, because we know what's happened everywhere else. China is not on another planet, and the realities of dealing with an infectious disease are the same there as everywhere else. So they're going to see a huge surge in the number of cases, and then the political decision about how to deal with that is something that every government has had to deal with. And some have been more forthright than others. Some have counted deaths in different ways and infectivity or infectious rates in different ways. But when we think about the reality, I don't really know anybody who has gone through the last couple of years without getting it. Personally, I survived for 2 years without being infected. And then I got it at just a tennis gathering for a group of friends back in May of this year. So eventually everybody will be infected. And then it's only really a question of how quickly one gets over it or whether one experiences symptoms at all. And that is going to be an accelerated path for China because of the vast number of people in close quarters. So there's obviously the potential that they're going to have a problem in the next quarter because it's going to take about 10 to 12 weeks for a huge surge in cases. And then there's the political decision about whether they're going to intervene or whether they're going to let it rip. But when we move forward, let's say we get to April, and there are going to be some really harrowing tales, because we've seen lots of examples of that over the last few years, and there will be a large number of people die from the virus. But then it will peter out. And then all of the money that's been allocated to support the economy will be active, and we'll see a recovery in Chinese demand. But not yet. It's too early to bet on that because we're on the easy side of the surge in cases, and the worst of it is yet to come. So we can anticipate there will be volatility in Chinese assets. And when we think about the H-share index, it got right up to the region of the 200-day moving average, and now it's starting to come back down. And it's certainly going to be difficult to try and get demand for housing back on track when people don't want to leave their home because they're terrified of being infected. So this is obviously a challenging environment in the near term. And we're also going to see that corporate profits roll over in the USA. And the US has been relatively well insulated. One thing that I find interesting is that when we think about natural gas prices, they're coming down rather hard. And we're down another 50 cents in here today. So these are dynamic moves. I would caution that the forecast for Thursday night here in Dallas is for negative 11 degrees Celsius. And this city is not accustomed to those kinds of temperatures. So we got an email today from the electricity board, and they anticipate that electricity will be available. I certainly hope so, because it's very difficult to work online when there's no electricity. I guess this is a note of caution that if there's no commentary on Friday, it's because I don't have any electricity, and I will certainly go off and find somewhere that does, but there is obviously a challenge in that. One of the beautiful things about the internet and the way we live these days is that I can actually get internet off from my phone. I can hotspot to my phone. All I need is a full battery on my computer. So even if the electricity goes out, I just have to write quickly. And I think that's one of the real beauties of the technological revolution that we've had over the last decade. But natural gas prices coming back down, well, then that's also going to help with inflation. And then oil prices are still quite steady. We had the Saudi oil minister talking in here today and saying that they're going to tailor their supply to the market environment. And the Biden administration are now buying inventory into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. So There is a strong likelihood that the 1,000-day moving average is going to hold, at least for now. We are not yet at a point where we're in a global recession. But there is certainly the possibility that the first quarter of 2023 is going to be very challenging because of the rising number of COVID cases in China. Then let's also pay attention to Europe. So the Euro Stoxx index was holding steady in here today, but still we have this big downward dynamic from last week, and that's a peak of at least near-term significance. Then in India, valuations are higher than they are in other emerging markets, but so is the growth rate. And so far, the stock market has been really quite steady, holding above that 18,000 level. It looks like a pretty orderly consolidation so far. So we're certainly still in a difficult environment. And then we can think about the where I think the biggest risks are. And for me at least, I think the risk that hasn't been discounted, not to mention fully discounted, is the risk in private equity. These kinds of structures are not marked to market. And there's very high occupancy rates in commercial property. And REITs are seeing significant outflows. And we've had a lot of messy financial engineering going on. And yet these prices are still coming down for Brookfield. And Blackstone might be oversold in the short term, but it is still in a downtrend. And this has been a rivetingly consistent sequence of lower rally highs. So we're still in a downward trending environment. And I suspect that it is only a matter of time before something breaks in the institutional investment circle. When we think about the comparisons with 2008, the leverage on this occasion is not in the retail sector. There wasn't any massive surge of zero down mortgages on this occasion. And we haven't had the same amount of mortgage bond creation and CDOs, CLOs. But what we have had is a huge amount of leverage within private equity, within institutional investors putting their money into these illiquid long-term structures and betting that cheap money would last forever. And yields are still pushing upwards. So this is problematic. It's going to cause a problem eventually. And this will be where the epicenter of risk is in this environment. And of course, one of the most important things then is degrees of separation. And emerging markets are a long way from the institutional money moving into private assets. So, as we see the dollar rolling over and private equity starting to lose its luster, then emerging markets are going to become more attractive. And they have the real potential to rally in a really significant fashion out of the impending recession. But they will not be immune from selling pressure during a recession. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.